by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, True Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Welcome in. Another beautiful day in Wyoming. We've got a lot going on now. We talked just a little bit ago last week about the future of hunt seasons. Janet and Brandon back this week because another year, another round of mandatory testing for CWD.
Yes, and some are mandatory and some are just priority. So we just ask for your help in those areas. But it really is, critical for us to determine the health of the herd that you do work with us to submit chronic wasting disease samples from, you know, if you're hunting in the area of certain places for mule deer, whitetails, or elk.
Brandon, I know you've been doing this for a while now, and how are people at, you know, submitting their samples? I mean, are they pretty much taking it on knowing that they're doing their part to help out?
For sure, Drew. And as the years go on, I really notice that the public is really engaging with this, especially if they've had an animal that tested positive before. They're like, hey, the next year, I really want to get my animal submitted. So more and more people are taking their own samples. More people are coming to the office. And we really appreciate that because our goal when we have a mandatory or priority area is we're trying to get 200 adult bucks out of a herd. So if we can accomplish that in 1 year, then we can move on to the next herd the next year. But if it takes us a few years to do that, it can really prolong our efforts.
So really knowing how to do it and knowing where to send your samples, that's a pretty important thing because you don't have to go to Game and Fish to have it done. You just, you know, you can do it yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you pull your lymph nodes out, you can bring them into the office and we'll get them sent off for you. Or if you want to stop in before hunting season, we can give you our CWD kits that you can take out, put in your backpack, go hunting with, and then bring them back into us. We have sample stations kind of scattered around. So we have one here at the office that you can come in on a weekend, throw your sample in there. We try to make it as easy as possible.
But here's the kicker, Drew, as we've discussed before, it is not quite that easy because it can be a challenge to pull the correct lymph nodes to be able to have the right tissue for our wildlife health lab to test that animal for chronic wasting disease. And that can be a little bit difficult at times. And that's why Brandon and our wildlife disease health lab are hosting a lymph node training again this year. We did it last year. It was fantastic. We had amazing participation. And we're going to do that again this year on September 4th, I think was the final date that we set at 5 o'clock. So keep that in mind. If you're a little concerned about how to do that, making sure that you can get to the lymph node correctly, because there's a lot of different things, salivary glands, different lymph nodes, the thymus is what I like to send in. You know, all of that kind of looks the same when you're in there, especially if the animal had a headshot and there's been damage to the neck, you know, or I guess that would be a neck shot, not a head shot, but a neck shot and there's been damage to those tissues, it can be a little bit difficult. And, you know, sometimes it's just crazy out there in the field. You know, in our case, we always had kids running around and everybody, you know, trying to do something different. And so it was a little bit of chaos trying to get those taken, but pretty easy to do once you know how.
So, Brandon, you mentioned that there are kits that will be handed out. What comes in this kit? And, I mean, is it basically pretty self-explanatory?
It is very self-explanatory. So, essentially, there's a little piece of paper in there where you fill out your license and your information there, where you harvested the animal. It's really important to put GPS coordinates in there, too, where you harvest it, not just on some ranch out here or some state land off this county road. It's really important to get the GPS coordinates. And then there's a little tube in there that you can put your lymph nodes in. And then there's also a tooth envelope in there as well. So everything's really self-explanatory. Yeah, to stop in the office, we can hand you out some kits. We, like I said, try to make it as easy as possible on people.
And that part, you know, is very self-explanatory, but how to do the lymph node instructions are not included in that kit. That's not something that comes with it. So what we always encourage people to do is get on the Game and Fish website ahead of time and download the instructional video and download the step-by-step guides that we do have online that do help people kind of know, oh, that's the gummy bear. I'm sorry for people who love gummy bears, but that's the gummy bear node that I was looking for. That's the texture. That's the feel. this is what I'm going to put in the container to submit. And that way you have it on your phone. I know where I hunt, it does not, we do not have cell service. And so that is one of the things that can be a challenge. And that's all under the Wildlife Health Lab's information on the Game and Fish's website.
And we realize that, you know, cutting into an animal's neck and stuff is intimidating, trying to find that little lymph node. But once you do it once or twice, it's really easy. It's real self-explanatory. Once you get in there, you find that little bean shape, really firm lymph node that you cut it open. It's a little bit gray. It helps a lot. So
he can say that because he does hundreds a year because he is taking those samples from folks. But, you know, I don't necessarily do a lot of that sampling on the front line. And so it's just what my family might harvest that I'm taking samples from. And so it does take practice. Like, I get that it isn't something that is an overnight. So come to this training, see what we're talking about, pull out the lymph nodes / gummy bear and know what you're submitting.
Even if you do come to that training, it's a good idea to have the video, watch the video, you know what I mean? Because if you see it done once or you put your hand in there once, like Janet said, doesn't mean you're going to be able to do it the next time, especially when your heart's racing, you just got the best elk that you've ever killed, and you're a little scatterbrained anyway. So
Yeah, exactly.
So, Brandon, do we know the areas that are going to be mandatory and those are going to be suggested?
Yeah, we do for sure. That's something I'd like to remind the public of. If you harvest an animal anywhere, deer and elk, and you want to get it sampled, we will 100% do that for you. But we do have some mandatory and priority areas. So this year, in the Castle region, Area 34, which is the North Natrona herd, all license types, we have 1s, 3s, 7s, and 8s there, will be mandatory. So you'll be receiving a letter kind of letting you know where we have check stations, how to get your animal sampled. As simple as we can make it, we'll try to do it. And then over towards Lusk, up by Newcastle, the Cheyenne River herd, which is Area 7 through 14 and Areas 21 as well. That is a priority area. So we're going to try to get as many samples as we can. We'll have some check stations, one in Manville at the Three Sisters truck stop and another one in Lusk at the meat processor there. So be sure to stop in and get your animal sampled.
You know, this is a great way to kind of get this under control because it's been a little different over the last few years and there have been some cases pop up. And does the research benefit you guys when you're out making those final decisions for licenses?
It 100% does because it gives us an idea of the impact that chronic wasting disease is having on our populations. You know, some areas in the Castro region, it's upwards of 40%. Prevalence in our adult bucks. In other areas, it's only about 5%. So it really helps us get an idea of what actions we should take to move forward.
Well, we might not be taking any season setting structure changes for management actions at this point. It is something that just educates us and gives us that data and that science that we need to, like Brandon said, really determine what chronic wasting disease is doing to our herds. We talked extensively last week and also last year about the importance of our iconic mule deer and their decline across the West and what's happening there. And one of the things that is truly affecting them is chronic wasting disease. And I'm not sure that people quite believe that sometimes, but it is absolutely true. And I had the privilege of, I was moderating some seminars at Mule Deer Days in Rock Springs this spring, back in March, and they had a guest speaker from Canada that was there. And he is a very famous hunter who has his own show on outdoor radio, on and on and on. And he was telling the story about what he was trying to achieve in his life and the number of bucks that, you know, were ranking a certain rank. And he was talking about how before chronic wasting disease hit, it was an easy goal. And that once they started to find CWD in their populations up there, he said he watched his, you know, mature mule deer bucks just disappear in front of his eyes. And he said it was just crazy that now he's not sure that he can achieve his goal of getting, you know, I can't even remember what it was, so I apologize. But it was interesting to hear him as a hunter absolutely recognize the loss of the mule deer bucks that were out there in the field. And, you know, that's someone who is out there day in and day out. He's recording these shoots for his TV show. So he has the video footage, he can actually watch it. And, he, you know, hearing his experience with it was really kind of, you know, mind blowing, because I think sometimes in Wyoming, it's been here for so long, we just kind of forget about it. And it's something not to forget about. It is absolutely critical that we learn everything that we can about how this disease is impacting our populations. And the majority of the ways that we can do that is through hunters.
You know, one of the things you had mentioned there is mule deer. And when we think the CWD, we think the mule deer, but all of the deer and elk can all be affected by this.
Right. They're from the cervid family. So it's all of the deer and moose. So elk, moose, whitetail, and mule deer in Wyoming. Of course, if you live outside of Wyoming, it can also affect reindeer.
So, really, Brandon, it's so important that people, no matter what it is, I mean, you might as well just help out the cause, because it's going to help eventually the future of the herds that are here.
For sure. And we're really lucky, Drew, that we have our own lab here in Wyoming that will sample our CWD samples. So, you know, typically we tell people it takes 3 weeks to get your samples back. Sometimes it's sooner than that. And we're really fortunate with that, because a lot of other states don't have that lab. So it can take months to get the results back. So we tell people to not consume that animal until they got the results back.
So when folks are thinking about their hunts, I mean, when will the kits be available so they can really start preparing for that?
We have them here right now. So
Brandon's been holding on to those babies since about June. So he is ready to get them out of his office. He is ready.
Yeah. So if you know where you're going to be hunting, obviously you got your tag, you got your area down. If you're one of the mandatory areas, go in and get this kit and have it, so then it's something else to take off of your list.
That's right. And not just the mandatory areas, but our focus or priority areas as well. And so those are the areas that we really want to get that number of samples so that our data is statistically solid. I know people don't necessarily care so much about that, but man, it's important to us as the data geeks to really have that behind us. And so it's really important. And again, I cannot thank the public enough for their participation in this. And so whether you're giving us a sample based on wanting to know whether your animal is positive or negative for your own consumption, or whether you're just giving us that sample to help us get the data and know the health of the herd, it is critical and so much appreciated.
Awesome. Well, you can find all this information at wgfd.wild.gov, or stop in and chat with them there at the office, or mark your calendar for September 4th when you can stop in and see that the example class to learn how to do this.
Absolutely. We hope to see everyone there.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Here we are at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports with Brian Woodward. And boy, Brian, it's here. The end of August means you can look ahead and see dove hunting. You can see elk hunting. You can see all kinds of hunting.
It's vastly approaching. And, of course, we still have a bunch of really good fishing to do. So, September 1st is kind of the opening date for most of our archery seasons in Wyoming, depending on your area. But, yeah, we're seeing a lot of guys getting ready and ready to hit the field.
One of the things that we've talked a lot about is, you know, if you have a bow, if you have a, you know, if it's a compound, if it's a crossbow, that, you know, you better check it out. Well, now you've waited so long. I mean, is there a possibility that you're going to have to wait a little longer to get something in like that?
I mean, at this point of the game, if you have something break down on you in terms of like you break a string, there's a good chance you're going to be out of commission, unless, you know, you prepared and had an extra string, you know, in the case and ready to go. But most of these string manufacturers, you know, they produce these strings by the bow, made to spec, and, you know, most of these companies are 4 to 6 weeks out to get those new strings delivered.
So, I mean, at this point, it may be worth just looking at buying a new bow if you're going to have to wait 4 to 6 weeks to get a string in.
That's a tough pill for guys to swallow. I mean, you know, bows aren't cheap, but we're seeing a lot of guys, you know, borrowing friends' bows and, you know, maybe changing the draw length and to get it to fit their needs. We talk a lot about being prepared and, mm-hmm. you know, prepping for your seasons. And, you know, I'm already looking at waterfowl seasons, and a lot of those dates don't really kick in for us till October, November. But, you know, there's a lot of prep work that goes into that, you know, getting blinds out and getting them covered and, you know, maybe repairing some and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, you kind of got to look ahead and, there's just so many few weekends, you know, to get that stuff done.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially if you don't always have weekends off, like, you know, I just have Sundays. It definitely makes it a challenge.
There are a lot of variables that go into a successful hunting season. Obviously, weather plays a role, because if it's too hot and dry, fire may break out like it has recently. And, you know, it has really probably closed out the hunting season in some areas. So you got to be able to turn on a dime, really. And if guys didn't get the draw or just focused on the bird aspect of it, I mean, it really is something that if you start now, then you can really have the stuff that you need ready to go by the time it gets here.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. We have a lot of guys, you know, that come in from out of state, and they may have drew a tag of some sort, and they come in here and they say, hey, I've got area XYZ, you know, do you got any good places that I can go? I'm like, yeah. Have you not done any research yet? You know, I mean, hunting to be successful, I mean, you got to put the time in, and that's a lot of times is behind a computer, behind a map, you know, out in the field doing some scouting, some glassing, knocking on doors, possibly getting some permission. But you can't just expect to say, well, geez, I drew a 48 elk tag and I'm going to go kill one, you know, without putting some effort in.
Right. And you know, Onyx Maps is a great way to start, because you can kind of see where the public land is and who owns this and who owns that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't give you the guarantee that you're going to be able to go to those areas. What we have found over the years is some of those public areas are surrounded by private land that you can't get through unless right. you have that permission. So.
Well, and you and I both have been hunting with Cedarwood or Cedar Ridge Outfitters the last couple of years, and I had a trail on my Onyx of the area that we had, you know, entered the property from, and our trails, and they're all burned up. I mean, right. You know, Onyx Map does show you all that and what the boundaries are. So, you know, for you and I this year, if we're gonna try to salvage a 48 hunt, we're gonna have to do a little more digging and research and see what it's gonna take to get out in the field.
If you're focused on the elk hunt, and I know that there are opportunities of other hunts while you're here, you know, if you kill out the first day, mm-hmm. you got a few days you want to do some other options. And what are some of those options during, you know, like the elk seasons? Small game possibly?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some small game. Some outfitters will even, you know, offer that to their clients, where they'll take them out prairie dog shooting or whatnot. Maybe just doing some sporting clays or something like that. Riverbend Roosters is always a great option. You know, there's they've got the dogs, they've got guns that you can borrow. So the bird farms, I think, opened up August 1st. So for a hunter that comes in town and they're looking for something to do, we do have a lot of guys that, are booking trips with fly fishing outfitters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they may have a 4-day antelope hunt successful the first or second day. And instead of sitting around waiting for the processor, you know, in a hotel room, they'd rather be outside in a drift boat or maybe a walleye trip at Glendo or whatever the case is.
Yeah, so there are definite options. If you have run into a stalemate where you're kind of in a weird situation at this point, but then also, you know, just getting out and if you do decide, well, I want to go down on the river and I want to fish, I mean, you could come in here and grab, you know, some equipment that'll last you a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of, even packable rods, you know, that, you know, maybe you didn't necessarily want to buy a rod, but and you don't want to spend, you know, $100, $200 on it. There's some packable rods that'll still get the job done that you'll be able to take back in your luggage. So, you know, it's not going to be a disposable scenario. But yeah, there's lots of great fishing, even just from shore, if you don't want to, you know, book an outfitter. I will tell you that your success rate will go up immensely if you hire one of these guides in the area, because these guys are the best. They know what parts of the river are fishing well. They know what bugs are eating. You know, they're going to get you on fish. So I would highly recommend any of those outfitters.
And that's, I mean, even if you're not in town, if you're just looking for a fish and you don't have a whole lot of time, mm-hmm. it's great to just, you know, reach out and get something from these local guys.
That's right. And occasionally you might catch on the hook fish truck here at the store.
Yeah, look at that. and that in itself is a feat, because that's the hunt.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, obviously, come on in, check them out here, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And I know, Brian, that we're almost into the thick of things. We talked about the boots. You still have time to get new boots, get them broke in, the packs, and get all your equipment that you need.
Yeah, you know, and like I said in the past, last couple of weeks, we're seeing a lot of guys, you know, some are updating and are upgrading their firearms, but we're seeing a lot of guys upgrading their optics. And, you know, I had the opportunity last week to go down to Greeley and tour the Burris manufacturing facility plant down there, and then got a day on the range out there with them. And I tell you what, the technology behind these scopes anymore is pretty phenomenal. You know, you may not have an opportunity to shoot at 600 or 700 yards on a regular basis, but some of the new scopes, the Burris Eliminator 6 specifically, you're going to sight it in at 100 yards with the ballistic data. You're going to program it right from your phone. It's going to program that scope, and then all you're going to do is turn a dial into whatever distance, and it's going to basically, you know, take you out 700-800 yards. We had the opportunity to shoot 6.5 Creedmoors out to 1,100 yards, and It was, I mean, literally as easy as, you know, turning the turret to 1,100 and pulling a trigger.
Wow.
And outside of a little windage, I mean, it really was pretty phenomenal.
So, you know, upgrading is definitely a possibility, and get in here and check it out. Now, you know, you talked about the scopes, but if you're heading out and you're going to do some scouting, getting that spotting scope or some good binos would be a good opportunity for you there too.
Yeah, we have, a really good selection of binoculars, everything from, you know, the Burris rangefinders, the Vortex rangefinders, Leopold's got some. We've also carried the Leica, the Zeiss, and the Swarovski. So depending on, you know, whether you want a good, better, or best, whatever your budget is, we'll definitely be able to take care of you in that aspect. And then the other part of it is, you know, a lot of guys are maybe needing a window mount. You know, maybe they just need a new tripod. The tripod, the technology has really come a long ways. Seems pretty basic, and that, you know, maybe there wouldn't be a lot of, like, boy, it's just a tripod. But, you know, we're coming out with carbon fiber tripods at this point. There's different head assemblies. There's the death grips that'll actually cradle the gun in its cradle. And then there's a bunch of new Arca Swiss attachments for a lot of the guns. So, you know, if you have an Arca Swiss base on your gun, or you want to put an Arca Swiss base on your gun, those are all options that will help, you know, with stabilizing your gun when you're getting ready to shoot.
And obviously, if you know, there's a learning curve on all this stuff, and you guys can help them out and get them rolling with that too.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna have definitely some good basic information for you. Some guys are way more versed on different products than others. You know, if you're looking for a fishing question, I'm probably your guy. But if you're asking for a gun question, I'm probably not your guy. In most cases, there's a lot of guys that are a lot more gunny and more technically savvy on that stuff. But somebody here in the store will be able to help you, you know, whether it's in regards to dog collars, GPSs, range finders. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information that we can certainly help you identify and get you the right product in your hands.
Yeah, and the gun counter guys are great. Now, you know, I brought a gun in to let Jesse look at one day. He's like, oh, here's your problem. Within 10 seconds, you know, kind of figured it out. So definitely quality is top notch here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. If you haven't yet, go follow them on Facebook, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, Casper.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where we talk about hunting season, we talk about bird season, we talk about big game, but fishing is still really prevalent right now.
Well, and it's a really a good option for the guys that didn't draw any tags,
right?
You know,
or the guys that are a little antsy and don't have a season until mid October.
Yeah, and you know, the beauty of fishing this time of year is that there's not a lot of people out there. You know, mm-hmm. school's back in session, so all the play boats for the most part are put away and back in storage. And so, you know, the guys you do run into on the lake are generally fishermen.
So we've really had I don't know if it's an issue. It's kind of an issue. It is an issue. The low water levels throughout the summer, I don't know that I've ever seen them this low. I'm sure they have been, but, you know, it's only been 4 years that I've been here. But it's kind of changed up the game for a lot of folks.
Yeah, it definitely gives a guy an opportunity to see some structure and go, oh, yeah, I was fishing this shoreline. Now I see why it was holding fish, or, you know, the right type of rubble or rock pattern, or, you know, went from rock to sand, or maybe it was a weed line underneath that you just didn't know existed. So it's really, you know, as scary as it sounds to get on the water in low water conditions, it's really a great time to mark some of that structure. You know, I mean, everybody talks about jaws out there at Pathfinder, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of times when the water is at kind of a normal level, that rock pile is a foot under the water, and it takes out a lot of lower units. But right now, that thing's 25 feet out of the water. So getting your boat and nosing it right up to the rock, and then marking a waypoint on it. And I always change my waypoints to skull and crossbones, because I know I want to avoid that area. Yeah. But, you know, then eventually at one point, you know, the water level might be 5 or 10 foot above it. And you're like, it's a great opportunity to fish it. So now you kind of know where that structure is. So getting out there and kind of seeing, you know, some of the structure is kind of neat this time of year.
We've talked a lot about how electronics really play a big game. Graphs, and, you know, you have three graphs on your boat, and you have opportunities on your boat. But then you see some of these guys that not only do they have the mounted, you know, monitors, but they've got extra monitors that come in, and it really kind of gets overwhelming if you look at it.
Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of controversy and conversations to be had about, like, the forward-facing sonar. And, you know, if you haven't seen it, you know, you recognize it pretty easily, because when you get out to the water and you see two guys standing on the nose of the boat and they're generally, you know, got their heads down just staring at the graph, what they're doing is with the new technology, there's a few different versions of it. There's a Garmin Panoptix. There's the Lowrance Live Target. And then Hummingbird has their Mega Live. Basically what it does is it shoots an image in whatever direction you point it, and you can, you know, aim it out and see what's in front of you 100 feet. We've never been able to do that in the past. We've always been able to see what's down below us. Hummingbird came out with the side imaging, so you could see what was going on, you know, off to the side of you, but never really forward. And so, what guys are doing is they're using this forward facing sonar to hunt for fish. So they'll go to a point or an area that maybe they normally fish, or they think that usually holds fish. They'll scan. They'll be on the front of their boat. They'll be slowly trolling or moving with their bow mount, exploring that point. And if they don't see fish, they don't even cast.
Right.
And so it's kind of crazy, because, you know, it's guys, you know, would normally, you know, cast 200 times a day. And these guys now are only casting 10 or 20 times a day, because they're targeting and they're casting to individual fish, as opposed to just randomly throwing a jig somewhere.
Which is probably a good thing if you have casting elbow or, you know, something along that lines. But,
right.
You know, when I go out fishing, I want to cast out. You know, we do a lot of the fish, or you see a lot of the fishing where they're just dragging and you know, you see them sitting back with their feet on the side of the boat, and, you know, they got the little flags up, and then all of a sudden, yeah. Oh, yeah, me, man, if I'm going to be out there, I want to be doing something.
Yeah, and everybody likes doing what they like to do. And, you know, we were kind of talking about just how it's affects some tournaments across the country. A lot of tournaments are dropping in team numbers because, you know, some of the older anglers don't want to conform to the new technology, or maybe they just don't feel like they can learn it and be successful with it. There is definitely a learning curve to anything. You know, right. Most guys, it's kind of like our cell phones, you know. I mean, we generally use our cell phones for one or two things, and we don't really know all the different functions that it could provide us throughout the course of a day. You're probably different because you use yours for work and everything. But, you know, a lot of the older anglers, you know, they just don't want to learn. They don't want to be that teach a new old dog new tricks kind of thing. So, but a lot of them do, and the technology is there. It's pretty accessible. The Garmin Panoptix in that aspect, I think, still is the number one provider for that system. They have a portable ice unit, which a lot of guys are using on their boats. You know, you can take it onto your friend's boat, and then you have a little pole assembly that, mm-hmm. you know, sticks off the side of your boat and goes in the water. There's a lot of great opportunities and options out there for the new electronics.
So when you're going ice fishing using this technology, I mean, you're basically just looking to see what's under where you're at in the ice. It's not like you can go, you know, 20 miles down the river or wherever you're going to be. And
no, but, you know, GPS has really changed the game in a lot of cases over the years where, especially ice fishing, you know, you're like, well, I usually go 30 paces off of this point and there's a river channel here and then there's a rock pile. And so you drill a hole and you start fishing, just, you know, assuming that you're in the right spot. GPS allowed you to kind of fine tune that, because now you go out there and you dig, you know, drill six holes, and all of a sudden one hole is really productive. And you're like, all right, well, there's something here that's holding these fish. And so at that point, you could mark your GPS and say, yeah, this is a good hole. I need to make sure that I'm fishing this hole next time. And now what will happen is with the forward-facing sonar, you dig that hole, and then all of a sudden you put your transducer down, and now you can take a 360 view all the way around you, and you're like, well, I didn't know that there was a sunken tree 50 feet from here, and look, there's a bunch of crappie sitting around it. So then from your hole, you pace it out 50 feet, go over there, drill a hole, you put your fish finder down, and you're like, nope, not quite on him. You take that forward-facing sonar, you're like, nope, still need to go 10 feet to the right. You go over 10 feet, you drill another hole, and all of a sudden you're right on top of them. So it can be pretty effective for the fishing, the ice fishing especially.
So really, I mean, it could shorten your day, I guess, if you're out doing it like that. Honestly, you could go out for probably 15, 20 minutes and get what you normally would catch.
It definitely can help eliminate, you know, I used to call it ice trolling. You know, we'd get out there and one guy would start drilling holes, and, you know, before long we'd have 60 holes, you know, and we'd kind of keep bouncing from hole to hole until we found, you know, which one was productive and which one was producing fish. So now, you know, instead of drilling a hole every 20 feet or whatever, now you with that Panoptix, and you can get under the surface, look around and go, ooh, there's a big boulder over there. I want to sit on top of that, because usually those fish like structure, and you know, maybe the crawdads or whatever is going to be around mm-hmm. those. And so now you just get right on top of it, and you're like, okay, let's go.
Wow. So, and you just got back from Dallas and some shows, and I mean, are they focusing in on this technology as the way of the future?
Well, a lot of the tackle manufacturers certainly are trying to take advantage of that. And we've seen it with different crawler harness kind of presentations, where you're now casting a jig with a slow death hook that's attached to it, and basically using it to find these fish that are suspended, you know, and you can watch your jig as you cast it. You can watch it hit the water. You can see how the fish responds to that. You can see the fish is now suspended 15 feet below the surface. You get your lure 12 foot down. You're like, no, I'm going to roll this right over the top of this fish and see how he reacts and how he responds to it. I talked to a guy a couple weeks ago that was throwing a jig and a worm, and he was casting to fish, and he was letting the jig drop right past the fish, and the fish would chase that jig all the way to the bottom, sometimes 20 feet down. He would chase it to the bottom and pin it to the bottom, and before he had it. And I think what this forward-facing sonar is really allowing us to see is that, you know, especially with walleye, we always assume that those walleyes are on the bottom, they're bottom feeders, and that's what they're doing. But there's certainly times of the year where those fish are suspended, whether they're chasing trout or kokanees or whether they just like that particular water column. We never really could target those fish because we couldn't see them or we didn't know what they were. And now with this forward-facing sonar, you can really kind of identify the fish a little bit clearer based on their size and the shape of them. And then you can also kind of tell how the fish are responding or acting. Again, just because you find fish doesn't mean that they're going to be active in feeding fish.
Right.
So I've seen guys get themselves pretty worked up. They're going like, man, that fish just chased my jig to the bottom. He didn't even bite it, or he didn't even look at this. I'm like, yeah, I don't have to worry about that in the back of the boat because I'm just fishing.
Yeah, right.
But you're getting your blood pressure up front.
Extra frustration with the new technology.
Extra frustration with it, yeah.
It's funny because I assume within the next few years, you'll be able to tell exactly what kind of fish it is because they'll have enough focus on that fish and be able to see.
Yeah, and even with this forward-facing sonar, I mean, you can identify what direction the fish are swimming. So, you know, I mean, they might be out in front of you, but they're swimming to the left. So you cast out to the left to get out in front of them a little bit, and it's definitely changing the game. You know, you can either play the game or not play the game. I mean, you can still go out and catch fish without it. A lot of the younger guys that grew up in the video ages, they love it to death. I mean, they just think it's, you know, I mean, it's like playing a video game. You cast into something you're seeing on a screen and you're trying to make them bite. I'm in the middle of it. You know, I sometimes think it's kind of neat, but at the same time, I just like to go fish. So
yeah.
I'm probably going to turn the corner and like go full bore, you know, get it all set up where I've got the best technology out there. Right now I just kind of got the middle of the road stuff.
So, I mean, obviously if this is something that maybe would, you know, be something that would attract someone in your family, you guys have the layaway program, you can really get the equipment started now.
Yeah, the ice fishing bundle, which comes with I think a 9-inch screen and then the transducer and a ice fishing pole assembly, I think they're running right around $3,200. So I mean, obviously it's a dedicated purchase. I mean, if you're looking at, if you got a spouse in your family that loves to ice fish and you want to, you know, help pay that down and tell them, hey, I paid half of this off for Christmas and you can go buy the rest of it. It's kind of a neat option. I know a lot of guys would love it. I mean, but because it is definitely a large purchase.
Yeah. So come on in, check it out. You want to find out more about any of this technology, you can stop here. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Hey, it's Drew on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. We've had the opportunity over the years to meet up and chat with some great folks, including artist Travis Glasgow. And we want to revisit one of our very first conversations with Travis on this week's show. Be sure to check him out, Travis Glasgow. You can go to 307store.com as well. Here's our conversation with Travis. It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, where we like to celebrate everything outdoors. Now, it's not just hunting and fishing, but the arts of Wyoming. If you've ever walked outside, looked up at Casper Mountain or gone to the Tetons and just looked at what we have right in front of us, it's amazing. But then you add work like Travis Glasgow does, where you kind of take a couple of different options and superimpose them and work them together, it'll blow your mind. And Travis, welcome back to the program, and it looks like you've been a busy character.
Thanks for having me. I've been out taking lots of pictures. I went to Grand Teton National Park this summer. Got a lot of good content for my art.
Now, what I love about your art is it's mostly all Wyoming landscapes and subjects. So you've got bison, you've got elk, and you've got bear, and you've got all these different Wyoming based things, and you merge them together. And the way you do that with that superimposed is so intriguing to me.
Well, I take my photographs, mostly landscape pictures. Sometimes I collaborate with local wildlife photographers. but I take my landscape images and blend them into wildlife, and I do that on Photoshop.
So one of the one of the things that I was just talking about a little earlier was you could have an elk picture on your wall, and you know it looks great, but when you have one of your elk pictures on the wall, it adds more color and more options, I think, than just that plain old elk up there.
Right. You're getting a landscape image as well. So you're getting, with my Teton elk, for example, you're getting the landscape image of the Tetons blended into the wildlife. So I think it adds a lot more flair to any space, really.
When you're thinking about the opportunities that you have in front of you, so you go to the Tetons and you take some pictures, and do you automatically feel like, man, if I had an elk or if I had a wolf, that's exactly what needs to go in there? Or does it kind of just work itself out?
It just kind of works itself out. Yeah. So, you know, I'll go through all of my images and then kind of determine which images will match with the wildlife. And sometimes it just depends on, you know, if it's a vertical image or if it's a horizontal image and how that fits into the wildlife.
And it's so cool. I mean, I was just scrolling through some of your newest works of art, and it just is really mind-blowing is the word that keeps coming back or the phrase that keeps coming back to me, because you just take it to that next level.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Hopefully soon I'll be able to collaborate with some local wildlife photographers as well.
Now, of course, Rugged Beauty is one that has been really your staple for a couple of years now, and has rotated around from museums in the Capitol, and it's all over the place. And you have a bunch more new opportunities that are happening with you, with even having some fabric made.
Yeah, so I've signed a contract with Hoffman Fabrics, and hopefully I'll be on all kinds of fabric probably this winter, actually. That's when they want to roll out some of my winter-themed designs.
So how will that be an opportunity? Like, what will people be able to do with this fabric?
They'll be able to go to a local retailer, and then they can buy the fabric. I'm not sure exactly what kind of fabric Hoffman will print on, but, you know, we're talking pillows, we're talking, you know, sheets, any sort of bedding, things like that. It'll be available.
That's kind of cool. Did you ever think when you started this that was going to be what happened, where people could really be sleeping with your works of art?
No, I didn't think it would actually be on fabric at all. I was just thinking, you know, printing out on canvas and metal prints and things like that.
There's
a lot of different options for my designs and different mediums that it can be printed on, which is great.
It's so cool to see that, because right here in Casper, we have such a great art scene, and you have kind of your own variation of the art that we have here. And I think it's so cool that people can go to 307store.com and check out all of the updated work. Like I said, you've got a whole lot of new opportunities for people to check out. And when they go there, they can actually buy these prints.
Yeah, they can buy them anywhere from, you know, smaller sizes to large format prints. I mentioned before the Delta Lake Grizzly, that's a new one. I have a trout blended into the North Platte River. That's a new one that I did this summer. And then there's a couple others on there as well.
That's awesome. Well, if you are on Instagram, you can go check them out at 307store.com, all spelled out, and look at the work, and then go over and buy some of the prints and check them out. And Travis, it's awesome to talk with you again, and I love to see that you have new art coming out all the time, and you're keeping yourself busy.
Yeah, it sure is a lot of fun. I'm going to keep doing it.
Excellent, Travis. 307store.com is where you can go check out some of Travis's work. Thanks again for joining us this week on Wyoming Hookin' and Huntin' Outdoors.
Wyoming Hookin' and Huntin' Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hookin' and Huntin' Outdoors.